Hi there, Animation Deliberation listeners. This is your host, Jay Scotty. I just wanted to hop on real quickly before the beginning of this episode to say a couple of things. So, first of all, thank you for listening. We are a brand new show, so definitely appreciate you giving us your listenership so early on in our existence. So, with that in mind, if you don't mind going to Apple Podcast or your preferred podcast listening app or website, what have you, and just leaving us a review. I'm not going to say it has to be a 5-star review off the bat. Obviously, we're a new show and have room to grow and improve. So if you've got feedback in that regard, please go ahead. And then the other thing I just wanted to say is, if you've been listening to us in our first few episodes, we've been covering Young Justice. Fear not if you've been watching along with us. We will return to our coverage of Young Justice very soon. I just wanted to take a quick break to hit Invincible before the new episodes come out, because it's a brand new show, and there's obviously a lot of interest in there with it being an action animated series. So, yeah, thanks for joining us, and look forward to the continued coverage of Young Justice, and enjoy this coverage of Invincible. Thanks. All right, welcome back to the Animation Deliberation Podcast. On a very special episode of the Animation Deliberation Podcast, we're covering Invincible Season 1, Episodes 1 through 4. All that and more right after this. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3. It's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back, folks. As stated at the top, I'm your host, J. Scotty St. Clair, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Zuhair Ali. How you doing, Zuhair?
The pollen is trying to get me to start sneezing and not talk, but it will not prevail. I am here to talk about Invincible.
Excellent, excellent. It's always good to have you, my friend. And as I mentioned, this is a very special episode because we are deviating from our format for the first time by bringing on a third special guest host, and that is Mr. Nathaniel Muzzy. How you doing, Nathaniel?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing
Thanks
excellent.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. We should state right off the bat that myself and Zuhair, we're not super familiar with the source material, Robert Kirkman's Image Comics, Invincible. So I know you have a... You said you haven't read the entire series, but you're pretty familiar with the source material, correct?
So I have read, I believe, the first two, maybe three trades,
okay.
But that was years ago. So I know a few things have already deviated from the comics, but I was a big fan of them, and I fell off just because I wasn't reading any comics, and then the show came out, and I was like, I should watch the show, and now I want to reread the comics, so I guess it's doing its job.
yeah, definitely. I'm certainly looking forward to checking out the comics. They've been lauded for many years, and I've always seen them on the shelves and thought, I should check that out, but kind of kicking myself for never having done so.
This show is all about you kicking yourself for missing out on content, isn't it?
A little bit. Maybe that's going to be the through line going forward. It is the podcast where we take action, animation, and cartoons seriously, and where Jay Scotty kicks himself, to refer to myself in the third person there. But it kind of goes without saying, spoiler warning for both the comic potentially as well as the first four episodes of this Amazon series. We're a little bit late to the game, but I think it kind of works out nicely because everything that I've been able to research, I don't think it's official, but it looks like we're supposed to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 episodes. So this should serve as a nice kind of halfway point. But before I guess we dive too deep into the specifics, do you guys just kind of want to give your overall thoughts, Zuhair?
Holy fuck. I only watched... This is how it went. Jay Scotty messages me. Hey, I want to do Invincible. Go watch the trailer. Okay. Watch the trailer once. I was like, cool cast, whatever. We'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I made the mistake of watching the first episode before bed. I did not go to bed right after. I had no expectations going into the show. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. But it has not disappointed. Solid story. Awesome character development within 4 episodes. again, I have no background knowledge of any of this, but like I'm very intrigued right off the bat, and I barely have any speculations on like where this is gonna go. Just I'm along for the ride, and I'm all for it.
Mm. What about you, Muzzy? What do you think?
I thought they nailed it. I don't watch nearly as much animation as you, although your podcast is pulling me back in.
Good.
I'm starting to run out of free time, which is exactly the way we want things. But I thought they nailed the tone and feel of the comics. The animation felt good.
Mm-hmm.
It was visually interesting. The voice acting was really good. Overall, I'm thrilled about this series existing. I'm excited. I have Amazon Prime, so I can just watch it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm right there with both of you guys. It's kind of, not to bag on Amazon too much, but I really haven't had too many opportunities to queue Amazon Video up since The Boys has finished.
I mean, to be fair... Let's face it, Amazon is a service for two-day shipping that happens to have some media content.
Oh, God, I miss when they used to ship. Like, before the pandemic, they'd ship stuff here in 2 days. Once the pandemic started, they were just like, oh, COVID delays.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Now stuff is like 3 to 5 days. Like,
first world problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to Invincible. As I was saying, you know, haven't had too many opportunities to queue up or excuses to queue up Amazon Prime, but since The Boys, that is. So it's nice to see that they've kind of found a nice niche in the indie comic book world. But I agree with you guys. It's got a star-studded voice cast. The action is super well animated. I like how they are able to showcase these different power sets in unique ways that even though we've seen, you know, superheroes in live action, superheroes in animation for a few years now, they're able to showcase it in such a unique way. I was pretty impressed. And not to bury the lead, one of the reasons it kind of stands out so much is the gore. So
yep.
I'll say, let's get right into it. I mean, Zuhair, you said, holy fuck. My first thought was, holy shit. just in that first episode.
Email in and tell us what your holy was.
Holy cow's okay if you want to keep it a little cleaner than we did.
Netflix has really locked themselves up as the evil Superman streaming provider. If you need an evil Superman, Netflix or Amazon is where you go.
Oh, right, yeah. Between Omni-Man and Homelander, right?
We're going to have to start a bracket.
Yeah, if this is anything like The Walking Dead or Robert Kirkman's previous materials, like, don't hold on to your darlings. Like, anybody's fair game here, as we saw with the Guardians of the Globe. Just we get introduced to them in the beginning of the episode in this nice, you know, whole team united, save the president from these Mahler twins, but what helped to make that final sequence so effective and what was very wise is that while the action was intense and they didn't really pull their punches, there was never an excuse to showcase any gore. Like, the way they wrote that was pretty much perfect, because we find out later that the Mahler twins are not invincible. They can certainly be torn apart, but just not by regular bullets. So, mm-hmm. Yeah,
oh, except
we go through this whole episode. What's that now?
Except your eyeball.
Yeah. That's fair, actually. Yeah, we did see that guy get shot right in the eye, but it wasn't too gratuitous. So that's why when we finally do see, you know, brains exploding and sliding across the floor, it's so shocking, but so effective. Man.
I'm sure I noticed this before, but I was just reminded that Seth Rogen was a producer on this, and now I just can't help but think Sausage Party meets The Boys. That's kind of what the show is to me now. I'm sticking with it.
Okay.
But okay. Yeah, like, we're watching the show while covering Young Justice, so naturally I was making my comparisons to, like, who they were as the Justice League, because at the top of my head, I'm just kind of like, has DC and Marvel just kind of like set a standard of what kind of abilities we set from heroes, or is it just kind of like if it ain't broke, don't fix it? But when this started, I was like, okay, here's a bunch of new superhero team names that I have to learn, but I'm just going to call them by who I think they are. Even like on this Wikipedia page, it says she's loosely based off Wonder Woman. He's loosely based off Martian Manor. So it's like, even sure, Wikipedia is kind of like, this is what we're going off of. And looking at this team, I was like, okay, there's going to be some development. I'll get used to it, whatever. But at the end of the episode, when they just get slaughtered by Omni-Man, I was like, how did I develop this much of a connection with these characters? Like, I feel really bad for them right now, and I know based off the characters that they resemble, like, what they're capable of, and I'm actually, like, freaking out, like, no, like, you're the heavy hitters! Why haven't you started punching him yet? Why haven't you done this? Like, they really made me care for these characters right off the bat, and I was actually, like, feeling really bad when they all, let me just... die doesn't quite cut it. There's more gory word that must fit that standard more.
And they do it in such a smart way, how they endear these characters they're gonna kill off to you.
Mm-hmm. Right,
like the scene with Olga and Red Rush,
yes,
like sticks out in my mind, where she's telling him that, talking to him about is it Aquas, the Aquaman,
Aquarius, I believe.
Yeah.
She says, well, he's a fish man. He probably doesn't have a lot of friends. You know, and like, that simple line, that scene helps you understand who these characters who are guardians of the globe are. And then literally the next scene, they all die.
Yeah, it was a really smart way to do it. We get the little vignettes, and it's interesting that you bring up Red Rush in particular, because... one of the things that stood out to me in that scene is when he was talking to Olga, he said normal conversations for him are like, they drag on for an eternity. So I couldn't help but think, when we're watching Omni-Man crush his skull, like that probably lasted a lot longer for him than it did for us. And man, that's just brutal.
The punches were wild too, when he's like going in full speed and you see his knuckles breaking and his wrists like giving out. And I was like,
Oh God,
they did not spare any detail on this.
Yeah, it was intense. And then, you brought up Aquarius and the fact that she said he probably doesn't have any friends. And the one scene that we got to see with him before he took off to meet up with the rest of the crew, he was sitting there by himself, and he's like, finally some action.
Yeah, like you just feel bad for, you feel bad for him, and he has like half a line.
Well, it doesn't matter what universe it is. The Aquaman archetype always has to get a little flack.
It's
just the nature of the character. And I love the fact that he is just a straight-up fish man.
Well, and they're able to build up, because we know who the Justice League are, they're able to like help us work off of those assumptions.
Oh, yeah. Very true. Very true. But one of the things I couldn't help but notice, being a fan of like the behind the scenes stuff and the voice actors or whatnot, the Guardians of the Globe are basically a who's who of the Walking Dead cast. Like, we've got both Immortal, the leader, as well as Aquarius that we just mentioned, were voiced by Ross Marquand. So if I'm sure plenty of people listening here are also fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He just made a recent turn as Red Skull in both Infinity War and Endgame. And then I'm not the biggest Walking Dead fan, so forgive me for not knowing who he plays on The Walking Dead. Do either of you guys know off the top of your head?
I have not watched The Walking Dead.
Yeah, this is an animation
podcast.
He
played Aaron.
It's all good.
I don't know who Aaron is, but
okay.
He was Aaron.
He definitely joined the scene later on. I only watched the first 6 seasons of that show, but that's neither here nor there. Then we had Lauren Cohen voicing War Woman, the Wonder Woman archetype. Red Rush, the Flash archetype, was voiced by Michael Kudlitz. And I kind of like the fact that they made him Russian. I imagine they just lifted that right out of the comic source material, but it's kind of nice to get the representation and the fact that this is a very much a global team. So this loss is going to affect the entire world.
They did a really good job with... the inclusion and diversity aspect of these.
Yeah, yeah. The Darkwing archetype was, I messed up. I didn't get this guy's last name, but it's Lenny.
Lenny Michael
who
James.
Lenny Michael James, who was basically the character that shepherded Rick Grimes initially and then became like that hermit guy with the stick that went on to appear in the Fear of the Walking Dead as well. I should know that character's name, but I don't. Anyway, rounding out the cast there, we got Green Ghost, who was the Green Lantern archetype. I kind of like the way they subverted expectations there when she had her scene before the massacre. When you get the whole model photography shoot, they make you think it's going to be the model just with her having the shaved head and everything like that. But it turns out it's the photographer. So
photographer representation.
There you go, Zuhair. Yeah. And then finally, Martian Man, who's for my money is like basically the biggest straight up rip. I mean, outside of his fire set basically being primarily focused on elasticity, other than that, he looks the most like the character he's based on it, other than just like kind of elongating his head.
Yep.
But he was voiced by Chad L. Coleman, who was it Tyree? Whatever. I should stop trying to bring up the Walking Dead characters. I'm
Tyree
not familiar
Williams.
Enough with that show. Okay.
Thank you, Wiki.
Yeah. It really goes to show how effective this team was in the fact that I don't know if it's an act, if anything later on in the comics spreads any light on it, but the fact that, you know, Omni-Man is basically beaten to within an inch of his life. He's actually comatose when they find him there. There's something to be said. It wasn't an easy thing for Omni-Man to do, or if it was, he's a really good actor.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I believe that is a deviation from the comics. I remember that turn
okay.
going a lot faster. And I actually like how the TV show did it better, in my opinion. You know, you got to see why, like, the Guardians of the Globe were a big deal. I believe in the comic, he kills them all, like, really fast.
Okay. Though it would stand to reason, I know there are some deviations from the comic. I overheard an interview with Robert Kirkman. I don't know if it was on Kevin Smith's or another podcast or YouTube channel. Forgive me for not having that off the top of my head. But he basically said that Invincible came out in 2003 when he was 23 years old. So obviously, through time, he's learned to become a more effective storyteller. So yeah, it's just a super smart way to kick off the season. As I mentioned before, everything was kind of lighthearted and breezy and felt very much like a coming-of-age father and son story. And then just, wow, just to pull no punches and show us what this show is going to be about was a great way to hook me. And it sounds like you guys are on the same page there. So
yeah, one of the things we talk about on the Young Justice part of our cast is that, like, I don't like a Superman that's, like, purely invincible. And I like that, you know, I like the one that, like, if he gets hit by a missile or has people in the league that are on his strength level, like Captain Atom or Shazam or Aquaman or whoever. So I like that they went with the approach that Omni-Man can go toe-to-toe with people. Like, yes, he's the most powerful, but, like, not by much. Like, mm-hmm. two, like, Immortal and War Woman together were, like, giving him a run for his money. Like, he was actually struggling. He was taking hits. He was going down a bit. So, things like that are really important to me, where it's, like, if you have one person that, like, you just can't stop whatsoever, it takes the joy out of watching it, because then it's, like, oh, well, this person showed up. It's, story's over.
Yeah. You know, not to go back to the Homelander comparison, but one of the things about The Boys, and I get that this is one of the things that makes The Boys interesting, but no one in that series can touch Homelander.
No.
And that's their premise. But, like, this to me, like you said, is more interesting because it's like, yeah, maybe they could beat Omni-Man, but, like, obviously, they haven't figured out that Omni-Man is the one that killed the Guardians. Although, they're suspicious. And they brought in my favorite character in the series so far, and then they banished him to hell, which is our Hellboy analog. I don't remember him from the comics. He might be in there, but as a huge Hellboy fan, like, I just love that angle.
Yeah, what's the character's name? Damian Darkblood?
Yes.
Yeah, he's super cool, and he's voiced by a very prolific, not only voice actor, but live action actor, especially within this fandom, Clancy Brown. So, yeah, I would say he's as much of a Rorschach analog as he is a Hellboy. He's like Hellboy meets Rorschach.
Yeah, that feels right.
I love how, like, with Falcon and the Winter Soldier right now, they talk about how it's either aliens, wizards, or robots. And we've gotten all three of those within these four episodes already. but
yeah, that's a good point.
To talk about the Guardians of Globe a little more, like, we mentioned that they get killed off so quick, but the other two, I guess all four episodes, cover how much they meant to the world and how big the importance was, because mm-hmm. we get their funeral, we get their memorials, we see their family. If I recall, there was even a fish family under the umbrella. You'd think they'd enjoy the rain a little bit more. But we talk about, like, true. They talk about their stories more. They go into Red Rush's girlfriend and how she's, like, coping with it and trying to sell her house, and it's just mayhem in there, and how Debbie Grayson has to kind of deal with, like, being a superhero spouse. And they show the importance of all this and how it actually affects the world and what they mean to them. And then you see how much the planet gets invaded on a regular basis too, and how many villains are out there. That they did a really good job at setting up how iconic this organization is right off the bat, that bleeds into the other episodes.
Yeah. I would definitely agree. And it's kind of interesting that we get a lot of that context, even though we don't get to spend the hugest or the biggest amount of time with the Guardians on screen. A lot of the context and a lot of what we learn about them is through Omni-Man after the fact. Like, even though he was the one that brutally murdered them, he's the one that's, like, being, you know, the face of the public. He's the one that's speaking at the memorial as well as the funeral. And I couldn't help but pick up on, like, a couple of, like, the little interactions, like, even when they were still alive, when Immortal tossed the soldiers away and Omni-Man is kind of swooping in to save them all, and Immortal doesn't think he's going to get the last one, and Omni-Man kind of almost begrudging is like, I had him. And J.K. Simmons does just a great job of just, like, towing that line. Like, he sounds, you know, like, exactly like what you want him to sound. He's got that fatherly, reassuring, nice gravitas to his voice, but there is that level of menace, and the writing for the dialogue does such a great job of conveying just how callous he can be in like small offhanded ways. And it's almost like we, the audience, are starting to pick up on that, just as his wife, Deborah, is starting to pick up on it as well.
His voice has a sense of, like, entitlement, where it's like, you all are beneath me, and I'm going to make that very clear to you. Know your place. I'm the strongest here. And they give that dialogue a lot, even in the opening scene with the guards. And they're talking about how, like, they went through, like, supervillain training. It's like, what are we going to do? Just, like, stick around and then run, and then talk about, like, how useless humans really are in this day and age. But he does have that presence of, like, nah, I'm top dog. What were your thoughts on Omni-Man, Muzzy?
Well, I was just going to say, they do such a good job with, like, the moments where Omni-Man snaps.
Oh, yeah.
Like J.K. Simmons just, like, can turn it on and then turn it off, like, so effortlessly. And to be honest, I didn't read enough of the comics to know where it's going. Like, I don't... It seems like as soon as Mark gets his powers, that's when Omni-Man starts having having these snaps, and then he obviously kills the Guardians.
Right.
But I don't know if those are related or not.
I think Deborah even comments as much, saying as such, ever since Mark got his powers, that's when he's been, you know, a lot more short, prone to anger, and just, I think she even says, just straight up mean. So
He seemed terrified when it was when his son said that he had his powers too.
Yeah, so that's like the big mystery to me is, does Mark getting powers, did that change something about how Nolan relates to this world? You know, and like I said, I haven't read far enough into the comics to know what that could or might mean, but like, it, you know, I feel like I read just enough of the comics for it to be perfect because it made me want to watch this series. Right. And then the series has me hooked. I like some of the things happening are retreads. Some things are definitely new or added in, or probably from later comics added in earlier. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know where it's going, so I still get to experience the mystery.
Yay!
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I will be curious to see how his relationship with Mark specifically like continues to develop, because right now it very much still is like he is the father that's training him, and even though there is obviously we as the audience know a lot more about his potential for evil, Mark's still clueless, and Mark still wants to be just like him. So that's another really interesting narrative choice to take, and I imagine that's the same way in the comics there. But I, as far as his motivations, the only thing, like as far as dialogue that I could really pull is when he does go back to, I believe it was the Flaxons is the name of this interdimensional species that it invades repeatedly during episode 2. Anyway, yes. when he flies back and basically lays waste to their entire society, he says something to the effect like, "Don't you get it? Earth is not yours to conquer." And I thought that was a pretty interesting word choice. You know,
yeah.
He told a certain story to Mark, but I mean,
he calls himself a protector, but what is the real intent?
Yeah, what's his definition of protecting? Yeah,
I do think he like. We get the flashback where he's telling Mark about, you know, he came from the society and they send people out to protect all these planets. I think it's pretty clear that that's an unreliable narrator and that's not the entire truth. I think it's pretty I don't know if it's obvious. Maybe I'm just, like, projecting something in here. But I think he's sent to help conquer Earth, but my question would be, why hasn't he done that, and how does Mark change that? But
yeah, maybe like the concept of the Guardians were a threat, and if he were to try to take over, then he wouldn't quite have the compliance of the people, of the Earthlings, like knowing that they killed their heroes. So maybe now it's like, this is how I stand up above everybody else, so that they're on my side and they welcome, or they allow me to bring in more Viltrumites.
Yeah.
So they can bring in more Viltrumites, and I feel like his son is what's stopping him, because now that the globe isn't an issue, the Guardians of the Globe aren't an issue. His son could be somebody that could reach the same power level and be a threat to him.
That I think you might be right on the money there, because that would totally tie into like the through line of Mark wanting to be just like him, but that being, you know, both a blessing and a curse potentially, and Mark having to, you know, decide whether or not he does want to be just like his father or not. So yeah, I mean, the only other thing, now that we're like discussing it, is I'm remembering at the memorial when he's speaking about, you know, which heroes will rise and fill in the Guardian's place. He says he will first and foremost, mm-hmm. and then others like him. And he looks to his son, and that's actually one of the more like, you know, positive and seems like genuine and tender interactions that he actually has. That doesn't seem like it's being, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like it's not a masquerade, for a lack of a better term, but it always seems like there's a bit of a facade to Nolan Omni-Man when he's interacting with Mark specifically. I would say
got that Lex Luthor charisma.
That he does. That he so does.
This is a little bit of reckless speculation, but I wonder if things change for Omni-Man because he was able to reproduce with an Earthling, and powers came through that. Like, that seems to be what triggered this event. So, like, I don't know, like, what that means to the Viltrumites, but, like... Okay. Or maybe he was just planning this and wasn't planning on Mark actually getting powers.
That totally could be the fact that, you know, Mark's powers have finally manifested, could signal that Earth is a planet that could potentially be cultivated. You know, yeah, who knows what this state of Viltrum or the Viltrumites is. They could be, you know, a waning species that needs to find a way to...
breed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like that a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if that's it at all.
The best part of this rampant speculation is there's people that have read like these comics for like 12 years and they're like, you guys are so far off.
Yeah, I know there were a few people like Aaron Deming, Sony Tetris. I think he's pretty familiar with the source material and he was excited for us to have this conversation. So he's probably one of those people that's like face palming right now, but hopefully the speculation's entertaining anyway.
Yeah, like I don't know, there's a certain fun in like seeing people experience something you're a fan of for the first time. I hope we're giving that to Invincible fans.
Certainly hope so. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, that is a good opportunity. We've been talking about the show and, the title character has come up a lot by way of his interaction with other characters, but, Invincible Mark Grayson is such a great lead character, and Steven Yeun does such an awesome job of embodying, not only like that youthful, idealism that you hear in his voice, but also like the angst as well as like the real disappointment, I guess there's a like certain hopeful expectation, wanting to rise to the occasion that's just broadcasted so well for the character and instantly endears me to the character. It was hilarious that the fact that the first time we see him, he's sitting on the toilet and his mom walks in on him. It's like, okay, that sets the tone for what you can expect in this series. Would you guys have any real big takeaways for his character arc? I mean, obviously he went through a lot in just these four episodes.
I love the character. Obviously he's the title character. You're supposed to love him. But you know, he's such a great analog for comics fans. Like, he's a little awkward. Mm-hmm. He's unsure of himself, but then he gets these powers and he's still not coordinated. He's still not, you know, he's still not perfect with him, but like, he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what a perfect character. Obviously they didn't have this in mind when they were planning the show, but to have an Asian main character as your main guy when we're dealing with, you know, all of the Asian hate and stuff that's going on in the US right now, it's kind of nice to see like representation. And he was, you know, they didn't change his race. He's half Asian American, half Viltrumite in the comics too.
Right.
And you know, it's kind of nice to not see just another white superhero. We get a lot of those. I think he's great.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to steal any of your thunder as your hair, but he definitely had his Steve Rogers moment that even before his powers manifested, he stood up to the bully and took the punch, which, you know, Amber comments on later on. A lot of guys have thrown punches for her, but he was the first one to take punches. So
yeah,
just kind of shows what kind of guy he is even before he is quote-unquote invincible. Cue the title card.
I like the way they throw the title card in. That is really cool.
It's one of my favorite gags. Yeah,
my Marvel comparison was, he reminds me of Tom Holland Spider-Man. in the sense where it's like he's so excited to be part of a team and have superpowers and do this and do that until he realizes like how traumatizing it actually is. And in his first encounter, he's like, he hesitates on his flying, on his punching, but like he has like witty remarks and comebacks for everything, and he's wearing the suit and he's like a whole other person than when he's out of it. So it's like anything that comes to his mind is very vocal, and I really like characters like that. So it's great how every time it's in a tense situation, he just has like the right thing to say just to kind of give that little comic relief in a very intense show, which, as I've stated, is there's a lot of holy fuck moments in the show, so we kind of need that that commentary from time to time.
Yeah, you bring up that first battle and how traumatic it was for him. I immediately think of when he had that old woman and he's flying with her cradled, and he gets shot in the back and goes for a tumble and winds up in that crater. And when he looks down at her, oh, her mangled limbs. Oh my god!
I forgot about that.
It was rough. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the tone of this show is so interesting because it's simultaneously bright and colorful. Everything's in the daytime for the most part.
That's true.
It's hopeful, and yet it's also just dark and traumatic. It's just the duality of its tone is, it's difficult but fun. I mean, in that same scene, they're fighting these Flaxons, and it's almost comical because these aliens just keep coming back and getting their asses kicked over and over. And, intermixed with all of this gore and horrible reality of what it's like to be a superhero, like, Invincible is still like excited to be a hero and optimistic and hopeful, and like, you know, it's and I think that's Invincible himself is what sets us apart from the Boys, because the Boys feels very hopeless a lot of the time.
True even in terms of like that whole, you know, the contrast between, you know, the bright and colorful character designs, which, by the way, I just have to give a quick shout out to the character designs. It's funny that he asks for something iconic, which is really difficult to do in this modern age. You know, superheroes have been around since what, like the 20s, 30s, and they're still able to, like, every single character, for my money, there's obviously homage being paid to a lot of characters, but they all feel very unique and they stand out, just like in my favorite animated series when there are multiple characters and a lot of action happening on screen. I never have a problem keeping track of where anybody is. But going back to what I was saying just about, you know, the contrast in terms of even the tone, like as far as the pace of the show goes, we get these nice character development moments and nice conversations and interactions and relationship building, and then those are side by side with these really bombastic, over-the-top action set pieces that really don't hold any punches. I mean, we were just talking about that Flaxon invasion, and you got Duplicate running around constantly duplicating herself while versions of her just getting sawed in half, and you watch the organs spill out on the street, and it's just like, okay, this is every day for these guys, but it's not every day for Invincible, and he does a really good job of, showcasing that trauma. But as you guys mentioned, just like with Spider-Man, it never gets him down. He's still the underdog. He's always going to get back up and keep on fighting. And I do believe a big part of that is, you know, he's looking up to the example of his father. And that's just, you know, a huge primary motivator for him.
And as I've stated before, being a martial artist and someone who just enjoys action media, when they show action scenes where there's like solid choreography and you can see like the motion that's happening and the exchanges between the characters, that really impresses me because the detail on every action scene is impeccable in this show. It's not, you know, Dragon Ball Z level action where they're just like disappearing and you hear and just kind of figure what's going on. Like the choreography, the animation, the style, all of it it's very spot on.
But, you know, speaking of that Flaxon invasion, I would say outside of Mark's relationship with his father first and foremost, and then his mother, other than that, like, two of his biggest relationships, at least in this set of episodes we've got, were with Adam Eve, who's a member of the teen team, which we met during this action set piece, as well as Amber, which is the girl at his school, which I mentioned earlier when he had that, you know, Steve Rogers moment taking the punch. So, you know, it's kind of typical of a teen coming of age story. He's got, you know, the romantic triangle. I'm not one to, like, ship people, and I even feel weird saying ship, but do you guys have, or, you know, Muzzy, given your knowledge of the comic source material, any indicators of where you think the relationships are going to go, or do you have a preference of who he winds up with in that regard?
So from the comics, I don't remember Amber being in them. I think she might be an added character or a character who appears maybe later.
Okay.
That they added from the start, you know, kind of. My guess is, if he could rewrite the comics, he would have added her from the start in the comics. But we get Adam Eve does go to his school in the comics, and she is dating Rexplosion in the comics,
right?
So that line is there, but we don't get the Amber part, and I think the Amber part is really interesting to me because it forces him to stay in touch with his human side, and it gives us that Spider-Man balancing his superhero life with his hero life.
Definitely.
With his normal life.
Yep.
So I'm having a producer Ashley moment. Wikipedia says that Amber was redesigned from her comic book source to look more like her voice actress for the series. So it could have been somebody else and they, like, redesigned her.
Okay.
Or, like, reformatted her, but,
Yeah, the actor is Zazie Beetz, who has appeared in a number of comic book things already.
She's Domino in Deadpool, isn't she?
Correct, yeah. She's Domino in Deadpool 2.
Okay,
and then she also showed up in Joker. She was Arthur's love interest, the neighbor, if you want to call her that. Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I just don't remember him having a girlfriend in the comics. That, like I said, I'm guessing she shows up later, because from what I remember, there just was not a lot of time spent at the school.
Okay.
And I actually appreciate all the time they spend at the school. Like, I'm a Spider-Man fan, and that's like the Spider-Man part of this to me is, like, you know, and Invincible really is an amalgam of Spider-Man, Superboy,
sure,
you know, all these characters. But I don't know. I just like the contrast of all these powers, and he's still a little bit of a geek, or you know, socially awkward, trying to figure out the world. Like, I'm a sucker for that.
Yeah, I love that interaction they had the first time that he calls her. And she basically says, like, you're terrified of me, aren't you?
Yep. She is just so cool and far too cool for him. And, like, you know, that's what makes it interesting. And then, like, obviously contrasted with Adam Eve, who knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that character. I like the triangle. You know, it's been interesting enough without going CW on me. You know, like, it's a love triangle, not a love pentagon, octagon. No one's been brought back from the dead yet.
Not yet.
That I know of. So.
I love it.
It's funny that you mentioned the Peter Parker relation, because, as I said, like, on Wikipedia, they're comparing all of these characters to, like, who they're loosely based off of, and Adam Eve's comparison is actually to Mary Jane in a mix of Carol Ferris.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay.
I guess that Carol Ferris is more of the power set, but...
Yeah, with the projection of shields as well as projectiles.
Yeah, but if I had to ship with one of them, I think I like him with Adam Eve more. Because, as you said, like, she... Amber kind of has that vibe of, oh, you're afraid of me. Whereas Adam Eve has, like, his friend William kind of, like, brings up the point of, like, oh, you can't just go talk to Samantha. She's, like, the cutest girl. Like, everybody wants to be Samantha's girlfriend or this and that. But she has a very comforting personality. Even seconds before she knew who Mark actually was, like, she was easy to communicate with and kind of, like, leading him through this process of being a hero. And I guess I just kind of like that, the level of communication, empathy that they have with each other. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, every interaction he's had with Amber has been a rough patch, whether it be through the bullying or him bailing on her because she was, because he had a mission while she was over, just, like, whatever the situation is, like, it feels like he has to work harder for something that's kind of a forced thing where it's like him and Samantha just kind of click.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I wonder if it speaks to, you know, kind of what Muzzy brought up, the fact that Amber keeps him grounded to his humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe that will become more and more of a struggle for him. Obviously, it will be. And I think that's going to be one of the major through lines of the series going forward. But no, I definitely agree with you too. As far as his interactions with Adam Eve go, there was that really nice scene in the high school hallway right in front of the lockers. He's kind of at a loss for words, and she's like, "Do you need to talk about yesterday? You look like you need to talk."
Yeah, I love that comforting personality so much. There's not too many people that can, like, provide that.
I was just gonna say, the fact that everyone in this little, like, love triangle, the fact that they're all good, like, and they and both of his potential love interests have such good points, makes me super afraid now that one of them is going to die or Mark is going to do something that screws one of them over. And I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah, I hope we only have as much as we've made the Peter Parker comparisons here, I certainly hope we don't have a Gwen Stacy situation. I hope he doesn't have to learn that lesson the hard way.
Please tell me the Wikipedia doesn't say Amber is based on Gwen Stacy.
Thankfully, it does not.
A Gwen Stacy archetype.
I mean, regarding Adam Eve and relationships, like, man, did she get screwed over by Rick Splode in a very, like, I was shocked, but I was laughing so hard when he came out of the shower with, like, three versions of Duplicate.
Yep.
I was like, holy shit! He's having the time of his life right now. And because it's the guy who plays Pimento in Brooklyn Nine-Nine and,
Yep. Jason Mantzoukas.
And, what was the character's name in Parks and Rec?
Ooh, in Parks and Rec, I do not know, but I know
Feinstein.
He was...
Feinstein.
Okay. He was Raffy in the League.
Yeah, so, like, just his... I love his persona so much, and just the character that he had in Brooklyn Nine-Nine and hearing that voice, I was like, oh, you are nailing this role, bud.
Yeah. Actually, that scene with Duplicate actually brings up something interesting.
Mm-hmm. What's
so,
that?
So during the Flaxon invasion, we see all these duplicates dying, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And then during that scene, the shower scene, she says, they're all the real me.
I noticed that too.
So those aren't just, like, you know, copies or mindless. Those are actual living, like, clone people with, like, all of her memories and feelings and stuff that are just getting slaughtered in these scenes.
I definitely picked up on that too, yeah, which kind of ties back into, like, what I brought up about Red Rush. It's almost like you get to almost have a whole nother level of appreciation for these extremely gory scenes. Like, they're already so visually graphic, but to have that extra context to think about what's happening there, oh man, it makes it all that much more effective.
Yeah.
But with, actually, while we're on the subject of Duplicate, when we went to the prison scene where we had the Mahler twins escape, there was one cell that had, a bunch of copies of this young Asian guy, and I couldn't help but wonder. I was like, he has to be related to Duplicate, if not her like brother or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know, but that's a good point. I didn't notice him.
Yeah, okay. But as far as Rexplode goes, with his power set, it took me a little bit to understand exactly what was happening. At first, I thought maybe he was like an inventor Iron Man type, where he had like projectiles that he created that he threw. But over time, I gathered that he was actually more like a Gambit type. Like, he was able to charge just everyday objects and make those explode.
I didn't fully understand that until I read the wiki page right before we started recording.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like, he's got those change dispensers like they have at, like, baseball games. And he's throwing coins at people.
Right. Yeah, he says something to the effect, like, I'm out of pocket change here. But I don't think it's until episode 4, or was it maybe, is it 3 when he has the showdown with Monster Girl? I think it's 3.
I think it's 3, yeah.
Anyway, he holds that baton up, and that's where you actually see the hand go to the baton and actually cause the charging effect. Yeah.
Man, is it satisfying when Monster Girl whoops his ass.
That was so great.
It was. And he, yeah. And Adam Eve chimes in. Or no, Invincible's like, is this okay? And she's like, he deserves it.
And they're all like cool with each other at the end of the fight. But man, the side effect to her power is pretty bad. They used to call me Monster Woman, but I don't feel like explaining this every time.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. That's you would think that Robot would have known that before he recruited her as a new Guardian of the Globe, which, just backpedaling a little bit, we do get, having spent time with the teen team, Robot, who's their leader, who's voiced by Zachary Quinto, who does a great job of, you know, having that kind of emotionless, calculating voice. He is promoted to the leader of the new Guardians, and he recruits his new team, and we basically have these tryouts, which is where Rex and Monster Girl have their showdown.
That cliffhanger with the robot and actually being a bad guy was like, how are you messing with my brain this much every episode?
Yeah, because he's the one that lets the Mahler twins out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they have an unseen benefactor for quite some time until he steps out of the shadows.
Say it! I'm the real one!
Yeah. They're a lot of fun, those guys.
It's so well written. Like, the Mahler twins, it doesn't take you, like they immediately show up, and you immediately know, like, one's a clone, you don't know which one, and they argue about it. And, like, it takes them 2 seconds for you to understand their whole deal.
Yep, yep. And then I noticed that the one that begrudgingly admits that he's the clone just to get freed from the cell, he's the one that actually ends up using the other one as the human, as the body shield. I shouldn't say human shield because they're not quite human. I don't know what they are, but when he finally does clone another version, it's very clear that it's something to do with his blue physiology is what makes it possible.
Blue skinned, hyper powerful superhumans.
Oh,
that's what Wiki says.
There you go.
Long time adversaries to the Guardians.
Yeah, but Robot obviously has a keen interest in them because he's continued to, like, surveil what they're doing, even in the midst of, like, Guardian meetings. Like, there's a really cool scene transition where we were watching, you know, the Mahler twin make his new twin, his new brother, and then it kind of transitions right into Robot's vision set where he gets interrupted by Rexplode, and he says something to the fact, like, he was defragmenting, but obviously has a keen interest in their cloning process, and he even gets a blood sample from Rexplode. So I have to imagine that we saw like a fetus, a very gross, malformed fetus thing growing in a tank. So with that blood sample, I imagine he's going to try and make that thing a little less deformed and maybe transfer himself into a real body, because he had that moment with Monster Girl where, he tried to relate to her and say, like, you know, I know that how that feels to be looked at and not really understood for what you are. And then she kind of flippantly blows him off. What do you know? You're a robot. I was like, you actually feel kind of bad for him in that moment. So I have to imagine what he's doing has something to do with giving himself a physical form.
Got some Red Tornado vibes off of that.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah, he's Ultron-y.
Yes, even yeah, his head shape is very Ultron-esque.
It's cool that the robot actually gets the leadership position. Because I thought it Adam Eve, but the way that he was actually carrying himself and being the primary source of communication and whatnot, I was like, oh, shit, they actually gave the robot, like, the leadership position.
Yeah.
Well, and Robot is super likable. Like he was maybe my favorite, like, character. And then, like, the heel turn comes, and you're like, oh.
Just don't get attached to anybody. I like that one.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like, oh, I like you. You're probably going to die soon, aren't you?
But the while we're on the subject of Robot and his new appointed leadership, the person that gives him that role is this character Cecil Stedman. And I'm never one to focus on negatives too much, but as talented as the voice cast is, and as strong an actor I know Walton Goggins is, this is one that I just felt like was a little bit of a miscast. I don't know if it's just the character design not matching the voice or him just kind of mailing in his performance or what, but it's just one that's kind of not really... Any time that characters had significant amounts of dialogue, I find myself checking out a little bit. I don't know if you guys had any strong feelings as far as that goes.
No, I thought it was pretty appropriate.
Okay.
I think I'd agree with Jay Scotty for the most part, maybe not as strongly as Jay Scotty feels. I didn't check out, but like, it's when you have a Nick Fury or an Amanda Waller, who he's very clearly an analog to, you kind of expect when they talk, people listen. And I know that's just not the character that Cecil is. Like, the heroes kind of ignore him a lot.
Yeah.
But he just... It doesn't feel a lot of times like he has the gravitas you'd want him to have.
That's fair. Yeah. But...
Like from Spider-Man Far From Home, the line... Are you ghosting Nick Fury? And it feels like everyone in this universe is kind of ghosting Cecil.
I loved his line about, like, I can't teleport right at your front door. Sorry if I was off by a little bit. Showed up in your living room.
Did you buy that?
No.
No, I didn't.
But I love the excuse of just kind of like, I just kind of picked this general area and popped up here.
Low key... I think my favorite, like, C-tier character is Cecil's Clark Gregg, Agent Coulson analog, who's just, like, always there. And especially in the scene where they're sending Darkblood back to hell.
Right.
that's level 7 shit right there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Well, you've got this booky, nerdy, like, secret agent, like, repeating these demonic incantations.
It's like, man, you pay that.
I just
quick.
Love that contrast.
Yeah.
It's interesting how much Cecil knows about the Omni-Man attack, though, because he doesn't want Darkblood. Yeah, Darkblood to get any closer. It's like he senses that he's getting close to figuring out what happened. He's kind of like, nope, you figured it enough. Back to hell with you.
Like, the idea that he knows... Darkblood and Cecil both know Omni-Man did it.
Yeah.
Mm. They're both, you know, fairly sure, and they're both figuring it out. But Cecil has the wits about him to know that, like, hey, we can't just out this. Like, it's got to be handled. And Darkblood only cares about the truth.
Right.
And that's going to be a problem because Omni-Man's going to slaughter all of us.
Right.
Or could.
Yeah, it's very, very much Watchmen-esque in that sense there. You know, Dr. Manhattan has the potential to wipe out everything, and the one thing that's standing in his path is the immovable object, which is Rorschach, and we already made the analogy there. But, I outside of his interactions with Damian Darkblood, which ultimately ultimately lead to them excising him back to hell, for at least for the time being. I'm hoping that character comes back, because he's so great, and the way they introduce him, you know, with people their breath showing because he makes the room cold.
I love that.
And yeah, even the character design, I was so glad when he finally tipped his hat to Deborah, and we got to see that that wasn't hair, that was just a continuation of that white getup that he's got, which I don't know why that I appreciated that so much. I just like knowing that that wasn't hair. Other than that, though, yeah, for Cecil, outside of his interactions with Damien and assembling this new Guardians team, the big thing that he's doing is trying to get Nolan off planet. The first time is with Alan the Alien, who's voiced by Seth Rogen, who we mentioned was a producer. It was great to hear his voice, instantly recognizable. And
oh, yeah.
I love it. It was so funny, because you think it's going to be this big action set piece, and it is in a lot of ways. We got, you know, him slamming him into the satellite as well as into the moon, but then they finally just sit down and have a conversation, and it's like, oh, this was just a misunderstanding. You're looking for Urath. Yeah.
I hope that character returns.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How do you breathe in space? You don't.
So, other than that time that he tries to send Nolan to fight Alan, and it ends up being Mark instead, the next big time is in episode 4, when they have to go accompany the Mars mission. Cool. They want it to be to Nolan specifically to get him off planet, and that's stated outright in the episode. But Mark kind of continues to step up, and as much as he thinks he's doing the right thing, he's actually a foil to this ongoing investigation. Did you guys have any big mentions for that whole space mission for Mark, or how it impacts, you know, either his relationship with the investigation or Omni-Man for that matter?
Well, he's gonna bring
I love the sandwich gag.
Bring a lunch, kid.
And then the sandwich is just freeze-dried in space.
Yeah. Pack a lunch my ass.
But this is like the lowest stakes bet ever, but I would definitely put money on those facehugger aliens being important down the road.
Yep, that's a safe bet.
Yeah.
Safest bet in the history of safe bets.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And I guess it was kind of, they did a nice job of, like, bookending that episode with, like, you know, tying the themes all together, because we opened that episode with Mark flying with his father across the Sahara, and he had the problem of flying too low and creating a sandstorm, and eventually he was actually able to use that, you know, as a strategy to blind the Martians. The other thing I wanted to pick up as far as him being in space that really got a laugh out of me is that we saw that vulture-like character biplane that Immortal threw into space in episode 1. He was just flying out there.
Yeah, like, and he says, when in doubt, throw them into space. Yeah,
exactly. It works.
It definitely does work. It does.
I like the point of, like, they wanted the mission on Mars to be a success for humanity, and they were trying to keep the hero hidden at that point.
Right.
Like, yeah. These superheroes have taken the spotlight for so long that it's like, we need humanity to show that they're still useful in something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just goes to show the nature of the world. We kind of touched on it earlier, but they've done such a great job of establishing a world that includes, you know, the sci-fi, the aliens, as well as the extra-dimensional stuff, as well as the magic and the demonology. It just feels like this world that's, like, you know, lifted right from the pages of your favorite comic book worlds. There's the potential for dragons. It makes me super excited to see what other obstacles our main characters are going to face going forward. I think that kind of brings us to a good wrapping up point. Did you guys have any other big standouts from this particular set of episodes, or any characters you wanted to bring up? I know we didn't really mention some of the... there were a couple of other new characters that joined the new roster of the Guardians of the Globe, Shrinking Ray, and Black Samson. They got some nice moments in terms of like showing their powers, and then for Black Samson in particular, it seems like there might be some vying for leadership. So definitely going to be some growing pains for this this new group. Not to mention the fact that we got that revelation with their leader, Robot, that he's up to some more nefarious stuff, which we mentioned.
And like I said offline, we've been watching Young Justice so much that as soon as the voice actor kicked in for Black Samson, I was like, oh, it's Calderon. I've kind of heard that voice every day for the last couple months now.
Yeah, Kari Patton is...
I was like, now we're dealing with leadership struggle again, too? It's like, come on, buddy. You'll get there one day.
Yeah. I do like the idea that, like, he was an original Guardian who lost his powers.
Oh, they do drop that, yeah, that little tidbit there.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, Rex is kind of rubbing in a couple different times, because he says, didn't I make that crack already? Yeah.
Oh, it says it in the description, too.
Hmm. So it'll be interesting to get more backstory there. And then Shrinking Ray just kind of seems like, you know, she's bringing her best, she's bringing her A-game, but she doesn't have a lot of patience for people that aren't doing the same. And rightfully so, they were being pretty petulant there.
Adam Eve is just running solo now, right?
Yeah, she said she couldn't be on a team with Duplicate and Rexplode, so...
Yeah.
And if it hadn't been for that, I couldn't help but notice, like, Robot basically would have just taken his entire old team and put it on the new team. It's mm-hmm. like, nah, you sure there's not a bias there, buddy? But, I guess it's worth mentioning the one thing that happened in episode 4 that seemed entirely removed from the rest of the show. That'll be interesting to see how that ends up tying back in, was that whole scene in Egypt where we get a guy resurrecting a very, Mum-Ra like character. But
yeah, I don't know if that's good. I feel like there's a 50-50 shot of that being super important or just being a throwaway gag for the sandstorm that comes after Invincible flies
by. Oh, okay. That would be hilarious if that's all it ends up being.
but the show, like, and I remember the comic, too. Like, little innocuous things tend to come back later.
Uh-huh.
Like, small things were important in the comic. I remember that.
Okay.
So, like, it definitely could be, like, next season, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And, like...
Okay.
And, like, this is the origin for it that we got to see way back in episode 4.
Okay.
But...
All right, well, yeah, definitely something to look forward to, as well as, you know, as we've highlighted on this entire episode, we've been introduced to a wonderful cast of characters, chief among them, our title character, Invincible. Again, cue the title card. So in the next coverage that we do for Invincible, again, as I stated at the top, we don't know exactly how many episodes are in this first season, but we're going to assume that it's 8. So once these next 4 episodes have come out, stay tuned. We will have our follow-up episode coming up very shortly after that. So Muzzy, again, thank you for your time. Zuhair, thanks as always for being here. I'm J. Scotty St. Clair. You can follow me on Twitter at J. Scott for Real. That's number 4 and R-E-E-L. And please go to strandedpanda.com. Join the Stranded Army and check out the list of awesome shows we've got there. You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast is kind of the flagship show that started this network that's got a great family of shows that include the Star Trek Universe podcast, the Star Wars Universe podcast, Superhero Ethics, as well as Bingers, which Muzzy just recently appeared on for the Godzilla versus Kong, all those legendary monster pictures. So, you guys got any stuff you want to plug? Go for it.
I guess I don't have any projects going on personally. Like you said, I was doing the MonsterVerse episodes on Bingers. Otherwise, let me just plug Stranded Panda Trivia every Wednesday night, twitch.tv/StrandedPandaTV. You'll find most of us hanging out there afterwards during the After Dark. So come hang out. if you're an adult, have some adult beverages, and watch Zuhair Cyberbullying.
No one is safe in code names.
What you got, Zuhair?
Yeah, if you want to look into my personal nonsense, you can look me up at Zoo786, at Z followed by 5 U's on Twitter.
Very good. And then I should say we did create a Gmail for the show, so if you've got feedback and want to interact with us outside of the Stranded Panda chat, it is Animation Deliberation Podcast, spelled exactly how it sounds, at gmail.com. So hit us up with some feedback there. We'll look forward to interacting with you that way as well and incorporating your feedback into the show. So, Zuhair?
Stay whelmed.